Now, it's time to go Inside the Green Room with Danny Green.
What's good, everybody? Welcome into Inside the Green Room with former Tar Heel Danny Green. There's a number of items that we have to discuss in the National Basketball Association. Paul George is coming back from his suspension. Victor Wembanyama wants to be the MVP. But the biggest news in hoops, and oh yeah, by the way, there's expansion coming to the association. We'll discuss all of those things later on in the show. But the reason why we're doing this live right now on Wednesday at 5:15 Eastern, because late last night, Hubert Davis, the news was announced that Hubert Davis would no longer be the head coach with the North Carolina Tar Heels. There's so many different branches off of this tree. So let's get right into it, Danny. First and foremost, your reaction to Hubert no longer returning after five seasons with the Tar Heels.
I'm not shocked. I think a lot of people, everybody around knew this has kind of been brewing for some time. Not a long time, but we knew this was a possibility. I think I was more shocked at how fast it happened. Like, didn't even wait for the tournament to finish out or be over. Not saying they needed to, but I guess I'll be more surprised to see if they had some other names in the rumblings or who they hire next or how that process goes. Maybe they needed to make the firing quick because other coaches are getting taken up, you know, especially some in the family. You know, Wes Miller just got signed a 5-year deal at University of Charlotte. So that's the only other person that came to mind in the family that was like, all right, who would be next for us to hire? And he's gone. So I'm like, who else is in the family that's available? And then, of course, you got Mike Malone's daughter who's there. I don't know if he's going to be in talks or up for it or even want to coach college basketball. But, yeah, I think initially I was like, wow, you know, kind of fast. But I'm not super shocked by it. I think everybody knew this was kind of coming.
Yeah, back-to-back round of 64 losses definitely did not help his case. Now, some names came out, Danny, that I want to bring up to you, and we'll discuss those in just a moment. But I wanted to get back into what you were just referencing, going inside the family. And I feel as if it could be harder. It probably was a difficult decision when you do hire within the family of North Carolina because, you know, you have an appreciation for the person, how they played or even how they coached. And I feel like as if maybe if you go outside the family with this hire, maybe it is a welcome change and maybe it does make things a bit easier to kind of handle on both sides. Your thoughts?
Yeah. I don't think there's anything easy about firing anybody, especially somebody that was an alum and was a pro, great career, great, you know, media coaching, all everything he's done, he's been top tier. You know, he's been one of the ultimate Tar Heels. Right. So when you hired him, you thought this was going to be a long term type of relationship. And I mean, he's there 5 years, which is not very long in most coaching years. But yeah, it's definitely harder to move along or terminate somebody that was a former alum and somebody that, you know, Coach Williams kind of gave the keys to and gave the nod to and vetted. So, yeah, that's a tough one. But again, on the flip side, I mean, I said, I don't think it's easy regardless. Like, it's never right. Easy when somebody you hired, you thought was good fit for the job. You have ultimately say, you know, we made a mistake. This is not the person that we feel is fit for the job. We got to find somebody else.
Well, to Hubert Davis's credit, or for those who might have supported him and wanted him to keep the job, it is to be noted, college basketball has vastly changed in the past since he got the job. NIL.
The past three or four years.
Yeah, NIL has definitely turned things upside down. So I'm curious for you, again, we'll get to the names. I'm curious for you, why did you commit to UNC when you did back in the day? And do you think those same reasons still exist or are as powerful as they were for you?
I mean, it was a brand, right? The tradition, the history, everything, the pros that have come out of there, you know, Michael Jeffrey Jordan, who everybody idolized in our era, in our time, and probably still do, the Jerry Stackhouses, the Vince Carters, you know, the Rasheed Wallaces, the Antoine Jamesons, the Shamon Williams, the list goes on and on and on of how many unbelievable character and great players have come from the university. So yeah, the pride, the brand of what it meant to wear that sky blue, to compete in one of the biggest ACC conference in the world, to play against a Duke, you know, in Cameron, like to have be a part of that rivalry. That's one of the biggest reasons. Still a big reason, but today, do I still think it exists? They're there, but I don't think it's there as what it once was. It's definitely not as powerful. It's definitely not as meaningful. I feel like, you know, back then in our time, you had to go to a big school to get an opportunity to play pro. Mm. And then from there, a lot of guys now have proven that wrong. Like, we've seen Dame come from Weber State, Kenneth Faried come from like an HBCU or something like that. Like, guys now, like, I don't need to go a top program or conform to that to be a pro. I can go wherever I want, be a big fish in a small pond, and get myself in, you know, draft conversations. And now it's like, whoever's going to pay me the most money, you know, like, so it's not even about that. And we have some money, but again, it's like, you want to be a focal point. And Carolina's not known to make any one particular player a focal point. And that's just been since the days of Dean Smith. You know, they have the jokes of like, who was the only person that held Michael Jordan under 20 points per game? And they were saying, you know, Dean Smith type of thing. Like, we ran a system. Mm-hmm. They never made it about one person or one guy. And people that came into Carolina, I think maybe that's a fault. We didn't really accept a bunch of one and dones. Like, we got players that wanted to be there for 2 and 3 years, if not four. And if those that were expected to be one and dones end up staying a little longer. So people might have looked at it as a negative thing. Like, oh, you know, guys that are supposed to be there for only 1 year end up being there 2 or 3 years longer than they should. And that's not the case. So it's very different now. And again, NIL has changed not only the college game, but definitely Carolina a bunch. And I think that's one of the main reasons why Coach Williams said, I don't want to touch this. You know, I don't want to get involved with this. I don't want to do this route. This is not for me anymore. It's already a hard world to deal with. It's even harder now when players are getting paid handsomely in the college space. So, yeah, man, it's a different time. I said, if my son was to be growing up right now, would I say, hey, you're for sure going to Carolina? And he said, nah, I'm cool. I would understand why. Like, Carolina's a good school, but it's not producing the same type of pros. It's not the winning program or the brand that people looked at it, that it used to be or what it once was. It's still a staple, still a really good school, but it's not like highly idolized or put on a pedestal like it was. So, again, my son now is like, he's going to go to school where they're paying, like where they're going to give him the money, like, and give him the freedom to be who he is. So yeah, it's an interesting dynamic in a very different time.
So with all that being said, there needs to be a head coach, I would imagine, that could truly embrace this new era of college basketball to get you to the point where you don't have to convince, you know, your son to go to North Carolina. That's where he wants to go. And it could have nothing to do with your affiliation. It could have to do with maybe the pros that they're turning out.
Yeah, like
whatever,
Cal, right?
Whatever. But exactly. Everybody, you felt like everybody always wanted to play for Cal because if you play for Cal, you're going to the league. And obviously Duke recently has turned out a number of one and done prospects, and it's continue to lead them to get these caliber of players. I do think there's value, though, in building a program like that develops players or has guys that want to stay there for a long time. I mean, Tom Izzo is doing a damn good job at Michigan State, and he's developing players that are staying there for a while. So, and he's turning out a good team every single year. 28 straight NCAA tournament appearances, NCAA record. Shout out to them. So my question for you, Danny, and I want to read an email that we got last night about who should be the next head coach. I'll throw out some names for you first that, according to Pete Thamel of ESPN, that he put out there. So Billy, that could be considered. Billy Donovan, obviously he's with the Chicago Bulls right now. He reported that maybe North Carolina might go after Brad Stevens, who's obviously with the Celtics now, but his claim to fame, at least originally, was being with Butler. Tommy Lloyd from Arizona, Dusty May from Michigan, Todd Golden from Florida, who just got his contract extension last year, just won an NCAA title. I think from a play style standpoint, Danny, I think Nate Oates would be great because Alabama scores the ball. And that is kind of what I kind of recognized Carolina for a long time. He even threw out there Dan Hurley. Your reaction to those names first?
I like half of them. Some of them are shocking. Some of them, like, I don't know if he's going to leave or wants to do college again or stay in the pros. I like Dan Hurley. I like Billy Donovan, New York, Long Island guy. Like, I'm saying, like, I think Hurley's Jersey, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know,
Hurley's Jersey, Billy Donovan, St. Dominic's, Long Island.
Yeah, Long Island guy. I like Billy Donovan. I mean, Nate Oates, I've heard mixed reviews about. But he does run a pretty good program over there. I just would love to see if there's somebody qualified in the family that we can go to. It's just tough to
find. You still want to go through the family regardless.
You don't need it, but I would like it to. If the candidate is there, I would like to. But again, I mean, Billy Donovan is a good candidate for sure. I don't know if it, I always said Mike Malone, another guy I talked about off air with you. You know, his daughter's at school there. He's a great coach to me as well. I don't know if he would coach college or even open to doing that, but I think he'd be a good fit as well. Yeah, man. Who else was on that list?
There was a couple other names that I could. I want to get to this email.
Florida, Tony.
Florida, Todd Golden. Yes, Grant McCaslin from Texas Tech, an option as well. So I wanted to bring this up. Ready? And shout out to Matt Ashburn, who emailed us early in the morning. He said, make sure Danny Green gets this. He's a class of 2004 graduate. This is what he wanted. This is what he wanted you to know. He said he used to model your jump shot back in the day. He said, if the powers that be arrive at the decision that it's time to move on from Hubert Davis, adjustable decision, UNC needs to take the bold step to make Becky Hammon the first female coach in major men's college basketball history. This move would be seismic in the best ways. UNC has always set such trends. It's the Carolina way. Dean Smith would smile upon such boldness.
I don't not like it. It's interesting. Again, I think I love Becky. I think, again, Dean would be smiling. It's a lot of things I agree with. Does Becky even want to coach men? She's doing such a great job on the women's side and winning in the W. She's kind of a staple there and kind of helping the movement with what they got going on. Not a bad person to put in a solid place. But, yeah, I don't know. I feel like we need – I don't know.
Is the situation so critical? And I think Becky Hammon would do a great job. Obviously, she's a great head coach. But is the situation so critical in your mind that you can't go quote unquote outside the box with this one? Is the situation that critical to you?
Yes. Outside the box, like an experiment type of thing, is not what's needed right now. That would kind of be an experiment, but I don't think she's proven a really good coach.
Yeah, it's not necessarily. I think we all know she's qualified to do it. The question, but it would be outside the box. But I think, from what I'm hearing from you, the way it feels, especially coming off of back-to-back round of 64 losses, I think maybe why you still want to stay in the family, because you're almost afraid to go outside of the norm. Because if that goes wrong. But hey, fortune favors the bold, my friend.
Maybe so. I said I'm not a poet. We got to get somebody good, man. Like I want to say swing for the fences, but and again, I don't think we need to be doing kind of what the Knicks were doing, like trying to interview 30 different people. Then we'd have no idea. Interview in a second. Nah, we got to have it. We have to have an inclination of you guys know what you're doing and know what direction you're going in. Since the fight, like you should already have in mind, especially if you're probably thinking about this for the last 2 years or something, you should have candidates that you're like, oh yeah, we for sure got this guy, or we can get this guy, or we need this guy in our back pocket, that type of deal. So I don't know. I said, I love Becky. It's a far move from her, from Vegas to Carolina. It's a difference, change of pace. But yeah, I think she'd be a great fit.
Yeah, you're not head over. I don't know if you'll be head over heels over who the person might be, because it might not. It doesn't. I don't know if there's somebody's going to come from the family. With that,
we need a really good. We need a really good recruiter. Like we need.
That's what I was going to get to.
And a really good recruiter. And again, I know Cal. Just like we need somebody like Cal. But I mean, some of those guys are getting older now. Like, is there a younger version of a Cal? Billy, I like Billy a lot too. So yeah, I think I would be very, very happy if we get somebody like Billy Donovan or Dan Hurley. Like that would be great.
Shout out to some of the people who are in the chat giving us some of their questions. David C. Kingdom said, "I'm a diehard fan of 45 years and a member of the family. It is time
45 years. Ooh,
it is time to go outside the family." So let me ask you, I got a couple more questions.
One so
more
who question. Do they All suggest? Right. I'm wondering, fans got some, throw us some suggestions.
Well, here's the thing. I feel like there are guys who might still be coaching right now that you can't necessarily get. But you have to, at this point, you also have to recognize that they're going to have to probably finish out in the
NCAA. I like Brad Stevens too. I think Brad Stevens
would be a good look. But that's a I mean, he's clearly a program builder, but that's a long shot. He's not leaving. No disrespect. He's not leaving the Memphis Grizzlies. He's leaving the Boston Celtics. He would be, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's not leaving any other franchise. He's running things in Boston. I think he's doing pretty well for himself. That would be something though. So one more thing on this, on North Carolina, unless we get some more items in the chat. So you obviously mentioned a great recruiter. Can you tell me some other adjectives? If the press release comes out and AD says, "We have hired this guy to be our next head coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels," what would you want the top 2, 3, 4
characteristics,
adjectives, characteristics to describe this person?
Well, again, got to be charismatic to recruit, right? But I feel like you have like an aura respect factor, whether it's like a Pat Riley or a Pop, where some godfather type of aura, which is I think that all stems from how serious you take programs and winning, how you compete. Just how disciplined those guys are, disciplinary, militant, like type of guy. So if we could find somebody like that, I think those are the biggest keys. Like a military discipline type of guy that has an aura. Like when he walks, I'm saying he needs it when he walks in the room, but like you can tell they're about business. It's not somebody you want to cross. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I still think it's such an interesting thing because going back to what you were saying though, because in this NIL era, it feels as if you're trying to say, Danny, that you kind of need somebody to come in and redefine the program. Am I understanding that right? Does it feel like the program needs a redefinition?
Yes. I think it's time. Like we need a reset. I was like, I mean, mind you, because we're losing so many guys, we're kind of going to start over anyway.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about trying to reset, trying to redefine the program in this NIL era, because you end up having so many kids who are just transferring from this school to that school to this. You're not yet. I guess you could go out there and say, "Hey, we want you to be." Maybe you go out there and say, "I'm going to get a 4-star guy who could be here for 3 years, 4 years, instead of the 5-star guy, because I need this guy to help reset what this program looks like." But
that sounds
you can't
good,
guarantee you. It sounds good.
Guys on the move too. 4-star guys be out there trying to get paid as well. So
it's a tough job. College, now you understand why all these.
And that's why I said. Now you understand why I said I'll never go. Like, especially college, I'm cool. Like that's a lot. Like, oh, you throw your name in a hat? Absolutely not. I am not throwing my name in a hat for that. I don't need to coach. I'm cool. It's already not easy, let alone having NIL and like emotional teenagers. Like, nah, I'm cool.
Yeah,
I mean, Jared Hash just signed somewhere. I'm trying to think of like old assistants. Can't think of any.
If you were a part of the search committee or the interview committee, what would be the top question you would ask?
Oh, like as soon as we walk into the office and I'm like,
we're bringing in candidates, Danny Green, I want you to interview them. What's the first question that you would ask? And what's the first answer you want to hear?
I think I'd ask, like, what's your plan? Like, give me a rollout of your plan. Intend to do?
What answer would knock you off your socks, for lack of a better phrase?
I think they would tell me who they can recruit, who they can get, what their plan of attack is in recruiting them, what coaching staff members you're bringing in with you, like what assistants that you have on board that you can, like, that are also good at what they do and good recruiters. And then, you know, I guess telling me how you would, I guess, bring it back to, you got to use the money. How are you using the NIL money wisely? Who are you going to get? How are you getting transfer portal guys? Are you getting freshmen? Are you, like, how are you recruiting? So I think what would knock me in my socks is if they can tell me they're getting Tyron Stokes. You know what I'm saying? Like, somebody like that, they're getting somebody like that. We're going to go get him. We're going to get this big. We're going to get this point guard. That's the foundational pieces we'll get. We'll bring back so-and-so, bring back this person. And then I got my assistant coaches. This is the type of offense we're going to run. This is the type of defense we have. You know, this is what we're implementing. This type of conditioning we got going on. Type of nutrition we got going on. Yeah, man, it's a good thing. It's a reason why I'm not ever coaching.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. Are you open?
I think when you get down to it, eventually you get to the X's and O's, and I'm like, I want to see what kind of X's and O's bag you have also.
That's what I want to get to. Are you open to Carolina looking like Kelvin Sampson in Houston? More defense than anything, not up and down transition plays, secondary offense, which obviously was a popular thing.
Yeah, to start, I'm okay with it. The first 2 years, like, listen, we might look like, I don't know. We got to figure out and build our identity.
So if somebody said to you, Danny, I could win you a national championship, but our games are going to be 55-50, you signing on for that? Or does Carolina have to win a certain way?
We have to have a certain style of play, I believe. Like, slow muck it up. That's definitely not us. That was never ACC. I remember it as.
But what if I told you that? What if you like UConn and Coach Hurley, they might mess around and win another national championship.
For
and
sure.
Coach Hurley's teams are not necessarily offensive juggernauts. Kelvin Sampson this year might win a national championship. They've been, for the most part, known as a slow scoring team. If I said I'm going to give you a national championship at North Carolina, but we're playing 60 60 65 basketball,
gotta take it, man. Like, we gotta take it. We need one. Like, I don't care how it happens, we need to get winning in the program. I know we're used to a style of play of getting up and down and scoring in the 80s and 90s and run and gun ACC. But if we need to change it up to that for us to win, then we'll do it that way. Ultimately, winning will bring in prospects. It'll bring in recruits. You won't even need as much NIL when you're winning games. People want to be a part of winning. And also, they want to be able to somebody that can produce pros. So, yeah. You got to take it.
Of course, I think you do. It would be nice to kind of win a certain type of way, because I think that's what – But yeah, to the point, choice, though, Danny, if you wanted to build Carolina in the way that you saw Carolina as a recruit, as in, I gotta go there. That's how many you could have gone to Pitt, but in your mind, you said, if I go to Pitt, I'm not gonna be a pro. So wouldn't you want people to look at Carolina and say, I'd rather them run up and down? If I'm a wing, I need to have more possession.
Yeah, you need a style of play. It has to be a style of play. It's got to be built for, because we were most known for producing really good pros.
Yeah.
And I think that's got to come for, like, I wouldn't say first, but yeah, we got to get back to that and getting the recruits to want to come to where we are. So, yeah, the style of play
gotta
does
be seen a lot. You got to be seen as a pro factory.
And right now, it's only what? Cal and who else is known as that?
Cal, unfortunately for you, Cal as a coach and Duke as a program. If I hate to say it, but if I was a 16, 15, 14-year-old recruit, I'd look at Duke and be like, I'm going to be a pro if I go to Duke. The same cannot be said for North Carolina, and that's what has to change.
Yeah, right now it's not like that. So we just need one set. All it takes is, you know, one or two good recruits to change it around and then stand on a consistent line.
Then it snowballs.
Absolutely.
Then it snowballs. All right. Well, best believe we will continue to update the situation with the North Carolina Tar Heels as it continues to
unfold. We will be monitoring it. Yes.
We'll be monitoring it. And maybe Danny, you could, if you're not going to be the next head coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels, you might as well be the next inside reporter for the North Carolina Tar Heels. I would love if you broke the news.
Get some insight
on the pod one day and said, hey, sources have told Inside the Green Room podcast that XYZ is coming to Chapel Hill. That'd be a nice breaking story for you, wouldn't it? In your media journalism phase.
For sure. Tibbs is available, ain't he?
Tibbs would be something. Yeah. Who said where did you hear that?
I didn't hear it anywhere. I'm just thinking of like who was out there.
Tom Thibodeau is available.
Like I'm trying to think who has gotten fired all in the last year that nobody's picked up. Like, you know, it was Mike Malone, Tibbs. I know Frank Vogel, but Budenhauser. Like those are some decent guys. I don't know. Like George Karl is older now, but he was, you know.
Somebody wants, according to the chat, somebody wants you to call plays for UNC.
X's and O's. That's what I want to see. I want to see who got some good drops, man. Who's got the good stuff?
Going back to the Becky Hammon email that we got. Somebody put in the chat, will there ever be a time when a woman's coach can break into men's college basketball?
Yeah,
I think if they want to at this point, bro.
Yeah, I just feel like a lot of women don't.
If they want to,
I feel like they just want to stay on the women's side.
With the way that it's going, and how you know the new WNBA deal, I would think. Yeah, I would want to almost stay there too, just because I'm building the game. And shout out to Dawn Staley. Shout out to obviously Gina Auriemma for staying in women's hoops because they're producing pros, and the pros that they're producing have allowed now the women in the W to now make groundbreaking money. So shout out to them.
New money.
But I understand nobody's saying that they're not unqualified to do it. It's just a matter of where their impact would be grander. I don't think they have to prove themselves anymore.
Is the impact going to be grander in men's basketball? Or
I don't. Maybe. I don't know. It's a good question.
I think it'd be tough.
I mean, they've done so much on that side. All right. But this is, for the most part, an NBA podcast. So we're going to get to the NBA. Unless we get some breaking news that comes through about who's going to UNC, I'm going to go to some NBA discussions here. And I wanted to get Danny's thoughts on this. And when I saw the quote from Paul George yesterday, I really thought that his answer here or his insight would be valuable. So Paul George, after being suspended for 25 games due to a banned substance, is now returning to the Philadelphia 76ers lineup tonight. Joel Embiid is coming back. And DG, you good? You all right?
Yeah, not just had a headache.
Oh.
Yeah, good.
You got to say. So here's a quote, and I want to get your reaction because PG spoke to the media yesterday. The most difficult thing is when your body isn't where you know it needs to be or where it once was. That leads and bleeds into the mental side of things, knowing that you're limited. Being a pro takes a toll on you. My body wasn't where I wanted it to be. The expectations to perform because of my body not being where it needed it to be. Obviously, I'm going to have an expectation for myself. That's what led to a poor decision at the time. He said he basically ended up taking the banned substance because he was struggling had some mental health struggles. Danny, you've been in the realm of Paul George's shoes.
Yeah.
Where you're coming like toward.
A lot of us have been, a lot of older guys, at some point, your body just starts to, I'm gonna say, fail or give out on you, but you just get older. I mean, it's part of life.
How hard were those moments when you realize that you couldn't do what you know your mind can do?
Yeah.
I do appreciate how easily you were able to joke about the fact that you're not really a dunker anymore.
Yeah.
But I imagine maybe when you realized you couldn't play defense at the level that you wanted to, like, how did you deal with those?
That moments? Was the hardest thing, man. I said, once I'm in a situation where people are starting to call me out as like the fish, it's like, that's when I know it's like, it's over. I'm done. So it's frustrating to see. It's frustrating to be a part of. When people look at you like, oh, let's get the old guy and pick and roll. He ain't moving his feet as well. That's where it's the most frustrating. And I can see why somebody would resort to that if they have health issues and mentally frustrating. Your body's not performing at a level that they expect you to because of contracts and then all these other things above. But, yeah, man, it was tough to just – to watch yourself said, and then obviously getting back from me was rehabbing, getting the knee back and the legs back, but just seeing how guys were treating me or on that end of the floor, it was like, damn. And I think it was also coaches have not allowing me to even have freedom to try to move my feet or try to guard certain guys. Tough pill to swallow, man. Cause like I said, when you're elite or a pretty good defender and you had good reflexes and reactions and you're just not doing it, it's not getting the same. It's a lot harder. It's frustrating as hell.
I can only imagine what it was, what it is, and what it was for Paul George. Because Danny, it wasn't too long ago he was the cream of the crop in the free agency class. Everybody was pointing their fingers at the Clippers. Can't believe you let Paul George go. Can't believe you didn't give him the money that he wanted. Everybody was on the side of Paul George, and it looked like the Sixers won that summer. And obviously he hasn't been, you know, what they would have hoped. I think what adds more difficulty to it as well is that he also had to take a back seat. Not just Danny. Which
we knew that was going to happen. We knew he was going to take a back seat. But we just didn't think he's going to perform the way he's been performing.
Danny, it's not just a back seat to Joel Embiid when healthy. Not just a back seat to Tyrese Maxey. Also, there were times where it felt as if Vijay Edgecombe was higher on the hierarchy in the offense.
I feel like a lot of young guys said they push a lot of young guys in youth to be, and if you're not showing that consistently with your body and your play, and he always had multiple injuries. He had, when he first got there, injury after injury. That's why they were so bad, because he just wasn't available. And then by the time you're healthy now, you're already 2 or 3 years older. But yeah, and when you're making $50-something million a year, like people have high expectations. So I get it. I wouldn't say I would do it, but I understand why certain things happen the way they do.
I'm gonna make sure I get to your. I'm sorry, I'm also reading the chat here, Danny. It must be difficult. I'm gonna get to your question, Bill Wenger, in just a moment.
This is a good question.
Yeah, no, it deserves to be put out there. So as you look at the Eastern Conference now, with Paul George coming back, with Joel Embiid coming back, the scenario is quite interesting, Danny. Let me read you 5-10 in the Eastern Conference. The Raptors are holding a half-game lead over the Atlanta Hawks. Raptors in the 5, Hawks in the 6. Raptors, for personal reasons, I'm going to need y'all to hold on to that. With that being said, okay, so the Hawks are in the 6th seed. They are one game up on the 76ers. The 76ers are in the 7th seed. Now the 76ers are one game up on Magic, Hornets, Heat. So
That's kind of crazy.
Right then, they're right on their bumper. I don't know how it's going to play out. It's going to be fascinating run down the stretch. The Sixers getting back Joel Embiid is crucial for them to
potentially
get into that top six. But I will say this, though, Danny. You and I have discussed it, and you know we kind of lived it. You obviously lived it more than me. Joel Embiid being religiously hurt in the playoffs is a story as old as NBA time. One could say the fact that he hasn't pushed it this year and is probably, what, hopefully just coming back for the last 10 games or so could potentially mean that you could get a healthy Joel Embiid throughout the duration of the playoffs. If the Sixers said...
First time in a long time, right?
They probably couldn't say this because of all of the, you know, anti-sitting rules or whatever, anti-participation rules, whatever the Sixers are, whatever the penalties are. But if the Sixers said on the side, hey, bro, Joel, we're going to sit you for about 15 games right after the All-Star, you know, middle, you know, right, you play a couple games after the All-Star break, then you can sit 15 games or so. And then you go last 10 games of the season, we're going to get you right. Jalen Williams for the Oklahoma City Thunder missed 16 games with a hamstring. If they needed to, I'm sure he probably could have came back a couple of games earlier. But
yeah, if it was the playoffs, he'd have been there.
Yeah, playoffs would have been there. But this is the time to try and get right. So it might be a blessing in disguise, Danny.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, if you're a positive Philly fan, you're on the upside. Yeah, that's one way to look at it. But if you're a realistic Philly fan, I don't think you're banking on it or thinking it's going to happen like that. Again, for us, we hope because we want to see better playoffs. We want to see them in the playoffs and match up with somebody. Healthy Joel, Tyrese Maxey, Paul George, VJ Edgecombe. Like, that's a pretty good group. Kelly Oubre, Quentin Grimes. They've had some guys out. So we definitely want to see them in the playoffs and match up. But, yeah, I don't know if that is enough games for Joel. I wouldn't play that many games with him. And I think realistic Philly fans aren't getting their hopes up or even believing that or thinking that's not a possibility.
The challenge with Joel Embiid, and Bill, I kind of use this as kind of your – Bill, in the chat, I'll use this as a way to kind of get to your question. The challenge for the 76ers, and they've spoken about it after games before, things look vastly different when Joel Embiid is there and when he's not there. The pecking order.
And the system, the offense, everything is different.
The question was from Bill, how obvious is the pecking order on NBA teams and how much the best player can get away with things? Do other players fall in place? And I think when you think about the 76ers and you try to think about the pecking order and how things should go and how they are going, it's a convoluted situation.
For sure. What was the beginning part of that question? I think the pecking
order. How obvious is the pecking order on
NBA teams? It's very obvious. It's very obvious. So this is... Everybody knows who the top guys are. And if you don't, you're oblivious to what's going on. The top two guys get to do a good amount of what they want. I think that was the other part of the question, right? Are they allowed to do whatever they want?
Yeah.
Not whatever, but they pretty much get away with almost anything. Not everybody's coached the same. Not everybody has the same life. Not everybody makes the same money. Like, those guys are going to be treated differently because they are, and they're also carrying the load more. So they're going to need more rest. They're going to need more treatment. They're not going to have to practice as much, which they shouldn't. But there is a big difference between those guys and role players and the treatment.
Yeah. We don't have too much more time, Danny, because I know you got a – Danny's going to be balling tonight, and obviously he's also
– looks supposed like to hoop tonight.
Fighting against a migraine. All right, so –
it's my ibuprofen.
Real quick. Your top, we saw the quote from Wemby, and I love how Wemby is standing on business. I absolutely love it.
He ain't messing around.
The NBA should be so happy that we got Victor Wembanyama, not just the player. I'm talking about the personality of Victor Wembanyama. It is a joy to have somebody who's not afraid to talk it and to back it up with his play, but also talk about it as well. And very matter-of-factly, too. Not even trying to be, like, braggadocious. Just, like, very
matter-of-factly. It's just the truth. This
what
is what
he
it
brings
is.
To the table. And he's like, you guys need to start valuing defense. Look how much I change games with my defense. Oh, I might not score as many points as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, But if you know basketball, you know how many points I'm accounting for with my sheer presence. All right, man. Shout out to Victor Wembanyama for sure. With that being said, Danny, give me your top five MVPs for the 2025-2026 season. I understand we have some more games left, but for now.
We do. I want to go backwards, but I feel like I'll mess it up if I go backwards. So I'm going to go in order. 1-5. At number one for me, I really think he had an unbelievable case. And I'm like, man, Wemby, I would love for him to win MVP. I do think it's a little soon, but he's deserving of it. We don't know if we're going to get a healthy Wemby for like 70, 62 games, 65 games for the rest of it. Like, that's what's going to be a stipulation. He's a lock for a defensive player of the year, I think, when it comes to that part of it. So I also don't think the league wants to give him two awards in his first year of winning defensive player of the year.
Why not? Danny, if somebody is so overwhelmingly the defensive player of the year,
the league don't want to do that anymore.
I would think that automatically qualifies you for MVP. If you're the overwhelming favorite, if there's nobody even close, that pretty means you're pretty damn valuable.
On defense, MVP is overall, but defensively, you're very valuable. He's valuable on both sides. I just don't see that. Also, the league there was one time where the league would give one team multiple awards. They don't do that anymore either. Allen Iverson got MVP, Dikembe Mutombo Defense Player of the Year, Aaron McKee, like sixth man of the year. Like, they're not doing that
anymore.
It's
not happening. Yeah, that's not
same team or same player. Like, last time we got, since Olajuwon and Mike get Defensive Player of the Year and MVP, like, that's not happening anymore. They don't want it to. But
it should.
Wembanyama, he will probably bring it back. But I got SGA at one. I got Victor Wembanyama at two. I got Nikola Jokic at three.
Wow.
And I would have Cade on, but I don't think he's going to make the number of games. Mm-hmm. I got Luka at four. And then I guess I'll go Jaylen Brown at five.
I'm not here to argue with you. Your list is your list. I think Victor Wembanyama has made a pretty darn good case.
Very, very damn good case.
But it is SGA. It is SGA. It's what's going to have to happen.
Winning matters,
SGA,
man. Winning
it's the matters. Same. It's the same thing that's going to have to happen with other. Oh, that's happened with other guys. There's going to have to just be fatigue. Like LeBron, LeBron didn't win in a couple years because of straight fatigue. And the way SGA voter is going, fatigue,
yeah,
the way SGA is going, only voter fatigue gonna stop him. That's it. What's he got? Because what he has going on. Is pretty
winning games with his guys out. Like, most of his lineups aren't there. J Dub has been out for most of the season. He's been gone. Then Chet has sat some games. Hartenstein sitting games. Caruso. They've had so many guys sit games, and he's still finding ways to carry them and win. So
I want to make sure. All right. So two more things. I want to make sure I take care of some of the people in the chat, and then I have to get your predictions. One more time, Danny, just for clarification. Can you call some plays for UNC, or are you out?
I'm out. Somebody said, throw your name in the hat. I said, absolutely not. I'm out of that conversation. No, I'm good.
20 years from now? 15 years
maybe, from now? Maybe. Kids are older, out of school, maybe.
You would coach your son at North Carolina if that was an opportunity.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if I want to put
myself. You gotta get yourself set up to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Again, I don't want to put him myself in that situation. Like, I'm a fan of nepotism, very much so. I just don't know if I could do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if I could do it myself like that. You know?
Yeah. All right. Okay. And with that, one more thing. CB16 tips off on Thursday night, so we're almost there.
Tomorrow.
Who you got in your final four?
So far, and I picked with my guy Sean on ESPN the other day. We both had the same picks: Arizona, Michigan, Michigan State, and Houston. Those are my final.
So your final four is still clean.
So far, I got the Johnnies beating Duke.
I have that too.
Hope they get that done. So far, my final four is still intact.
And who's your champ? Oh, we'll save your champion for next week. I will say this, and I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna let you know before it happens. I did have UConn winning the whole thing. I got them beating Michigan State. I don't think Michigan State doesn't have enough three-point shooting. I think UConn is going to get their lick back against St. John's. I think St. John's does take out Duke. And then I think UConn matches up very well with Houston and Kingston Fleming. And next thing you know, they're in the national championship game. They're like 27 to 1 odds. I'm like, this team is very good. Tyrese Reed Jr., obviously Caravan, Solo Ball, Mullins, Malachi Smith. Shout out to Scoochie Smith. I have UConn winning. We'll see how it plays out. We'll be back on Monday to recap not just Sweet 16 games, whatever happened in the National Basketball Association. And if anything breaks with the North Carolina head coaching situation, I think we'll end up doing an emergency pod or something like that. That being said, we got to get out of here. Danny, tell them what to do, please.
You know what to do. Read, rate, subscribe, review. Peace.